Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans, not just here in Calgary, Alberta, the home of F101, but around the world. If you're hearing my voice, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start off this episode with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. It is officially announced today. The F1, FIA, the Players Association, or the Drivers Association, all those type of people, they have finally given in. They have finally collapsed. They have finally said, we surrender. In 2026, it was announced maybe a couple hours ago, there will be an 11th team in Formula One in 2026. It will not be Andretti, but it will be Andretti. It will be the Cadillac Racing team, essentially GMC Cadillac. Now, Andretti is not in the name, and this is kind of the specific reason on why we're bringing this up and why there's actually an 11th team to Formula One come 2026. So let's get right down to it. As we all know, as I've covered before, Andretti tried to get a team in by himself. He tried in 2024 through 25 and so on and so forth, or 23 through 24. Now, it didn't seem to go very well for him. Now, he has all the buildings, he's got the employees, he's got the technology, he's got the backing. He literally ticked every single box that the FIA and F1 had asked for. He even decided to pay that ridiculous, fee to get in there, because the dilution fund ended up being like $600 million or something stupid like that. So what's changed? Well, as I reported earlier at the beginning of the season, Andretti is no longer ahead of the Andretti sports machine as it is. He's no longer the head of the department that is pushing for an F1 team. He's kind of taken a back seat. He'll do all the background work. He will still be involved in development, but he's not going to be in front of the cameras. So that was one bonus. The other thing is that Andretti Corporation had brought it to the U.S. government's attention, Liberty Media, that essentially owns the rights to Formula One, also runs Ticketmaster. The CEO, Greg Maffoli, if I'm saying that right, I do apologize if I'm not. He ended up stepping down a couple days, like less than a week ago. Now, Greg absolutely, and this is from the insiders, from all the properly established articles that I've read and all the deep dive I've done, he absolutely hated Andretti. He was the one that was blocking the sale. Liberty Media has to agree to the teams that are in because they've got the broadcasting rights. So he said no to Michael Andretti. Well, Greg is gone. And it also happened that, Liberty Media kind of had to say yes. They were under investigation for anti-competition laws. I mean, they own so much stuff. It was kind of a conglomerate just of them. So they kind of had to say yes. So with those two people essentially out of the way, the path was officially opened for, a reliable, ethical, fair look at what the quote-unquote Andretti team or GMC Cadillac actually brings to Formula One. The drivers, the teams, the CEOs, everybody else seemed a little happier that Andretti's gone, that his name's not attached, and that his bullish ways of getting into Formula One have officially been kind of squashed. Although, to his credit, he did cross all the T's, he dotted all the I's, he put all the infrastructure in beforehand, and he thought this through legitimately before he decided to go in on this endeavor. I'm super, super excited. It's another 100% US-based F1 team, which means hopefully we'll get a couple more North American drivers, and it's going to open up two more spots for maybe some drivers you didn't think were ready for Formula One. Maybe we'll see a couple of F2 guys get bumped up. This is my hope. I think it's going to bring fantastic sportsmanship, competition to Formula One, and that's definitely what we need. Speaking of new teams for 2025-2026, Audi has reported sold a majority investment stake in their team to some business guys in Qatar. Why have they done this? Is Audi kind of figuring out how expensive Formula One actually is? Or was this their plan all along? They're going to buy the team. They're going to get in there, but then they're going to kind of substitute the payments and all the expense, kind of even the load a little bit through some major, major investment people. I think this is a great idea for Audi. As long as the team sticks to what they want it to be, as long as we still have Audi in 2025, I think it's going to be, I don't see an issue with this. I mean, if it's cheaper for the team and yet everybody still gets to drive, why not? Moving on, Aston Martin has announced a new major sponsor. Puma is now the official clothing sponsor of Aston Martin. So you'll see a little bit different designs, a little bit of different fit. You're going to see the Puma logo all over the place, not only on their clothes, but essentially on their car as well. I mean, this is kind of a no-brainer for Puma or any kind of clothing company that wants to get into Formula One. It's a great idea. It's the perfect time to do it. Then why not? Speaking of sponsorship change, Ferrari has announced a new premier partner. IBM will be taking effect January 1st of 2025. Now, it's not just rumored that IBM will be coming over just as a partner, that they will be the new technical software supplier for the entire team. So they're not just paying into Formula One, they're actually investing in the team as well. Again, it's one of those investment ideas and sponsorships that just makes sense. If you know it's going to be beneficial for both teams, then you know what? Why not? In my opinion, now I'm going to catch some flack for this, but I'm going to say it anyways. In my opinion, a sad announcement today. here it comes. Monaco has been extended to 2031. It is 2024. Monaco will officially be on the calendar until 2031. Why are you keeping this outdated, boring, no passing, although be it technical race that realistically, if you took it out of the calendar, would you actually miss it? Absolutely not. When you watch the broadcast of any race, anywhere of any year, it's always about the track. It's a little bit more of the drivers and what happened last year and this and that. It's a rounded experience trying to get the fans excited about the race. Even more so when it comes to Monaco. But Monaco talk is all about, oh, how technical it is and how close the walls are and how this and how that. It doesn't matter how technical the track is. Yes, it does make it exciting, but the only exciting part of the technical track is you're kind of waiting for someone to fuck up, Lance Stroll, and hit the wall and demolish their car. There's nothing else exciting about this old-ass, outdated, dusty jewel of the F1 calendar. It needs to go away. Just because it's one of the original tracks doesn't mean it's actually good anymore. If you want to keep Monaco on the calendar, upgrade it, update it, change the track. It doesn't have to stay so original. It doesn't have to stay so boring. It's one of those races that when I get up to watch it, and generally in Canada, it's one of the earlier races. It's one of those I'll watch the start and I will watch about 5 minutes of the middle section and I'll watch the end. Other than that, I don't give a shit because nothing ever happens. And when somebody does crash in Monaco, when someone, if it rains, if someone misses a turn, doesn't pay attention, it takes them 20 minutes to clean up the car off the track because the track is so fucking old. It takes them so long to clean the track if anything happens. So I can go and do the dishes in the morning, come back, someone crashed 15 minutes ago, and I can still keep up on what actually happened because nothing else can happen. Monaco needs to go. They need to replace it with another European circuit, or in my opinion, we need to get a little bit more, not another US circuit, in my opinion. Three is plenty. We need somewhere out of the box. We need somewhere special. We need maybe another Mexican Grand Prix. That would be fantastic. I would love to see that. What if we bring in another Spanish Grand Prix, something like that, something where something will actually happen and it will be an exciting race. So we have to deal with Monaco again till 2031. I know I'm going to catch some flack for this and I really don't care. It's not one of my favorite races. It's the least favorite race I have ever seen of all time, period. So as we sit right now, moving to the driver conversation, as of right now, with only what now will be after this weekend, two races left in the 2024 season, we only have one spot open for 2025, Yuki Tsunoda and V-Carb, also soon to be known as the Racing Bulls for next season. I don't think VCarb is having a hard time finding a driver. I think they are having more of a difficult time choosing which driver they want to bring in. With all the new faces and all the changes, and with all of these new F2 drivers and the promising rookie pool, I do believe, and I fully have confidence in them, that, but they are having a little bit of a hard time choosing who they want to bring in the seat. You don't want to bring somebody in for a year or 3 years, sign a good contract, and be like, oh my God, we didn't get the one that we wanted to. But at the same time, you don't want to be too hesitant, and then you're stuck with somebody who you really either don't want or necessarily can't afford, because at some point, all of the drivers are going to know that, hey, you have to have a driver at this point, and now you're kind of screwed. Now, with the addition of the GMC Cadillac team in 2026, this opens up a brand new kettle of fish. You only have a one-year contract before we have a brand new team on the grid. Do you want to start new? Do you want to start fresh? Do you want to start a legacy in a brand new team? Or do you want to be stuck with the sister team that is kind of the career killer for some people? When you make it into VCarb, it doesn't necessarily mean, like 90% of the time, it doesn't mean that you're going to Red Bull, because they've got Max Verstappen. The only seat that you may or may not be able to get is going to be Checo Perez. And for whatever reason, they keep signing him to more fucking contracts, which they don't need him to do. If you don't sign Checo, you can keep that moving. You can keep those two teams fresh, but you keep signing Checo, and then all of a sudden Yuki Tsunoda is kind of stuck in no man's land by himself in VCarb with an empty seat. Like I said, two races left to go in the season, and then we have the off season. The new car reveals will be in February at the O2 Center in England. So I would expect a team to be announced by the new driver to be announced by then at the latest. I hope VCarb know what they're doing and they can get a good driver that will sustain them for a bit without necessarily having aspirations of getting better and then leaving the team for somewhere else. And with this new team, what does the landscape look like for the cars themselves? Well, I've done a little bit of deep dive into this, and for you engine nerds just like me and some of the people that like the more technical side or learning the technical side of F1, let's get into the 2026 engine suppliers. Now, this gets really, really interesting. Now, this was done before GMC Cadillac F1 was announced. Obviously, GMC and Cadillac will be doing their own engines. Or will they? As it sits right now, we've got a couple of engine suppliers that do supply the majority of the teams out there. We've got five companies for 10 teams as of right now. Honda supplies Aston Martin. Ferrari supplies Haas and Ferrari, obviously. Red Bull, they are Red Bull / Ford, because they are getting together with Ford for the 2025-2026 season. They will be supplying themselves and the Racing Bulls. And here comes the interesting part. Mercedes themselves, they provide engines for not only themselves, but they also supply them for Williams, Alpine, and McLaren. And then when Audi comes in, Audi will be supplying their own engines, at least for the time being. Now, with Cadillac GMC coming in, they are going to be an engine supplier at some point down the road. I think their shot would be by 2028, they'll be producing their own engines. So the question is, who are they going to take for an engine supplier? There are some pretty serious options out there. Do they want to go with the Honda? Probably not. Just because they are going to be an American team, you want to try to stick with as much American, air quotes, ingenuity as you possibly can. So I would not be surprised if Cadillac GMC did sign a 1 or 2 year contract with Red Bull and Ford to get their engines up and going. Now, that being said, if they do want to stray a little bit and catch some heat that it's not an all-American or all, you know, North American, however you want to put it, engine and supplier, if it was my team and I wanted to put some money on it, I'd put it in a Mercedes. They are by far one, the most consistent, in my opinion, at least from the end of last season up until now. They cover the majority of the teams, which means they're doing something right. And I'm sure it would give Cadillac GMC a really good boost and a really good way to start the season. It's super reliable. It's probably going to be one of the more expensive engines that you get from a supplier. But at the same time, you know what you're buying. You know what you're going to get for your money's worth. Is it worth coming in with a brand new team without your own engine? If it saves you money for the first two seasons and you get your feet underneath you, why not? And I only say that because if Audi would be in longer than just a year before GMC Cadillac comes in, if they had 2-3 years underneath their belt, I would probably go with more of the Audi route. The only reason why I say this is not just for their supercars and not for their automotive racing, but I do, a personal opinion, I do feel like Audi's got a little bit more high performance engines than Mercedes does. I do feel like you might get a little bit more bang for your buck, and who knows what Audi's going to come up with. It still has to fit within some regulations of the codes and all that kind of jazz, but you never know what Audi's going to come up with because they are their own engine supplier, and they've started the development 2-3 years back when they first thought about getting into Formula One. So it's untested, but it's not at the same point. They put some serious brain power, money, and time into the development of this team, of the car, and of the engine itself. It could be an absolute blockbuster as soon as it comes out. And last but not least of the hot topics, a little bit of information that you need to know before this race comes out. It is involving the drivers' championships with Max Verstappen and the closest competitor, Lando Norris. Here's your stats. If Max wins the Max will win the drivers' championships if one of three things happen. Either they both DNF, which I highly doubt it. Lando finishes ahead of Max no more than 2 points, and that means like probably one position. Or if Max beats Lando, period, Max Verstappen will become the four-time drivers' championship. If this happens in this race, he will become only one of, I believe it's six or seven drivers who have ever done this in the history of Formula One. And now it's not four times period, it's four times in a row. That's how difficult this is. Well, folks, that is everything you need to know in the world of F1. Let's get right in to qualifying. Flying in Vegas, Las Vegas, baby. That's where we are. It's a little different than you would normally expect. It is nighttime qualifying. And unlike last year, they actually went around the track and made sure all the manholes were welded down properly. Congratulations, you guys. It's about time. You get it right the second time. So, hey, why not? It's not that bad. Track temperatures, totally clear. No wind, but a very, what they're calling, balmy and cold 10 to 14 degrees trackside. These guys were dressed up in parkas, winter gear. They were absolutely freezing to death, except for any person who's ever been in Canada or in the States before. Some of the people in the crowds were wearing heavy jackets. You're like, guys, come on. It's 10 degrees Celsius, not Fahrenheit, Celsius. Like, it's not that cold. You're in Vegas. You're in a desert, for Christ's sake. It's not that bad. Because of the weather temperature that these guys are not necessarily used to, it did play a little havoc on the track itself. Now, these guys were going through their hard, mediums, and soft and warm up and qualifying, trying to get some grip. But because the tarmac is still technically new, now they did do some repaving on the course unintentionally because it is still a street circuit and they had to do some paving on some additional side streets. So some of the track did get brand new pavement. So it's brand new, a little bit oily, and because of the temperature, a lot of guys were saying that it was like really, really slick. I think Yuki Tsunoda mentioned that it was like skating on ice. Absolutely no grip whatsoever. And with the cold temperature, it takes even longer for these cars and the tires to get into the proper temperature window. But these are the 20 of the world's best drivers, so this is absolutely nothing to them. They're used to cold, wet, and super, super hot conditions. So let's see what happens. Good old Lance Stroll doesn't make it out of FP1, or barely makes it out of FP3, full practice, does not make it out of Q1, ends up having an electrical failure, does not even finish Q1. He ends up quitting, or ends up stopping with 2 minutes left in Q1. They do end up killing the qualifying time just because he was parked in kind of an uncertain area. It took the marshals a little bit longer to take them out or to get the car out of the way, just because everybody has to go through before the marshals can get out. They just ended up running out the time. It was about 2 minutes 10 seconds, something along that line. Just enough for, if you are the first person out, then you can get a warm-up lap in, but it would be about halfway through the grid. You wouldn't be able to get out for an actual practice lap or your final lap. And if you're not on the track by the time the time runs out, you're not allowed on the track. They want to keep that track as clear as possible. Haas, they waited and waited and waited and waited. They waited with about 7 minutes left in qualifying. I mean, 4 minute tire warm up at least for these guys. They had really, really, really good faith. They did really well, actually, for having almost no warm up. They did make it into Q2, and spoiler alert, you know, they did make it into Q3 as well. So obviously they want to keep those tires as warm as possible because the tire blankets are still heated. You regain a little bit of grip, or you maintain it a little bit more than some of the drivers that have been out a little longer. Really, really good idea. You know, everybody that's listened to this podcast knows I don't like it when teams essentially waste time and don't go out and entertain and get the numbers like they're supposed to. But in this case, I mean, with 7 minutes left, there was plenty of time to do a couple of warm-up laps, and then they just went for it for the outright fastest time. I mean, it worked out well for them. So, yeah, good for them. Mercedes, Russell and Hamilton, Q1, just flying. There's something about cold weather and a Mercedes. It is in peak performance. The car reacts properly, and both drivers were not complaining at all. Checo Perez, you know, surprise, surprise, he was not fast. He could not find grip. I'd give it about a 50-50 shell of responsibility this time. It was a cold track, couldn't get temperature, and he's just on that slump. He's on that spiral of bad luck. When it decides to rain, it absolutely pours, and it's been raining on Checo Perez for well over half the season, if not three quarters of it. I don't see his luck changing anytime soon, but hey, you never know. And a little bit of ingenuity happening in Q1. If you were to look at the Red Bull in FP1, 2, and 3, full wing, big, massive wing. Well, they've decided that they brought the wrong wing 100%. It wasn't going to give them enough downforce. It was going to slow them down, end up giving them too much drag on this course. So essentially what they did is they took a Dremel and they just decided to start carving away at the back wing. That's right. They took a Dremel and they just essentially just carved out the back wing themselves. It was a drastic change. They did it within the time frame and not in Parc Fermé, which would allow them to do any kind of alterations. Technically not against the rules because they are altering a piece that is already on the car. It doesn't change the parts. It does change the spec, obviously, but apparently it fit within the rules. Will it or will it not help them? And they did it to both of the cars as well. Let's get into your bottom five in Q1. We're going to go from 20th to 16th as usual. 20th, Lance Stroll with that electrical problem. 19th, Valtteri Bottas. 18th, Alex Albon. Really surprising after the last 2 weeks that he's been moving that Williams. I'd expect him to qualify a lot higher than what he did. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. 17th, Fernando Alonso, another struggling driver. He's doing his best to get out of that car what they're giving him. It's not exactly the fastest car in the world. It's kind of one of the heavier cars. It's one of the bulkier cars on the grid. So, I mean, he's doing the best that he can. And in 16th, good old-fashioned, no luck, Checo Perez out in Q1. As I said, no speed, no traction, and just absolutely no hope in hell of making it to Q2. Moving into Q2, the track is finally starting to rubber in for them. It is warming up just a little bit. It actually got a little bit colder outside, but these guys were running fast enough and close enough that it did start to kind of change the setup of the road, which was nice for them. They got a little bit more traction, got a little bit more speed. And again, with that more speed, all you saw was just the battle of the Mercedes back and forth, back and forth. They're not getting in each other's way. They're actually helping each other. George Russell, really smart driving. Lewis Hamilton learning to be that teammate all over again, giving the DRS to Russell, Russell giving the DRS to Hamilton. Just really, really good, really overall good teamwork. Only, you know, their only competition in Q2 and Q3 would be the Mercedes or Ferrari, but still it was clean qualifying. It was nice to see, actually. It really was. Qualifying was going all good and handily and everything was happy except for, and this is a very, very expensive bill for the team, the third race in a row, Colapinto absolutely destroys the car, turn 16. He was on his fastest lap too. He clipped the inside of a wall, which sent him across the racetrack. So picture this. What you're going to do is you're driving to close your eyes. You're going to drive straight. Now, when you're looking at it, it's going to be a very slight right to left. And the only little slight right is because on the left-hand side, there's a little, almost like an elbow of a wall. And now it's just an immovable object that they put this wall around. It's not massive like Monaco or anything like that, but it is still substantial enough that if you hit it, you could absolutely mess up your car. Well, Colapinto clips it with the front wheel. He just gets so close to it. And there was no real reason for that. You're not going to get a faster line. It's not going to give you any more or take away any more time. It was just an unforced error from an inexperienced driver. When he clips that wall and he just essentially just skates right across going right. And he smashes into the barriers that they put up, which are like, they're so heavy duty in Vegas. The only thing that's heavier than that is the cement walls in Monaco. Colapinto hits it. It comes out. He ends up going to the hospital. He ends up tripping the G-force sensor in the car and in his helmet. That goes off at 25 G's for a collision. He ends up hitting the wall at 50 G's and is able to get up and walk away. Now, he is perfectly fine. The only question for this Williams team is, A, do you have enough spare parts? B, are you going to be able to get back in, like get that car back in shape in enough time to race the next day? Obviously, he's out for the qualifying session. He is okay, but do they have enough time? I mean, if they do, I mean, Colapinto needs to go and take every single engineer on his team out for dinner, buy them Rolexes and a really good vacation in the offseason because they absolutely deserve it. Race was stopped for about 15, 20 minutes just to clean up the track. Let's get into the bottom five right now. We're going to go from 15th to 11th. Liam Lawson in 15th, Colapinto in 14th, Joe Guanyu in 13th, Kevin Magnussen in 12th, and Esteban Ocon in 11th. I mean, the names that are in the bottom five kind of belong in the bottom five. A couple of rookies in there that are really still on really good pace for the 2025 season. I would be remiss if I said that Colapinto really deserves a full-time seat. Lawson always deserves a full-time seat. Just the way that they're driving, it's fantastic. They need to be in 25 and 26 and so on and so forth. They need these full-time seats. Magnussen, Ocon, they just couldn't find the pace because the track wasn't as rubbered in as they normally like. No space, no pace, no speed, no time, no Q3. Which leads us right into Q3. And what can I say? Q3 was Q3. There was absolutely no drama. Really, really fast cars. Again, the Mercedes are on rails. They're a rocket ship this weekend. We have seen Mercedes blow away Q2. Absolutely destroy Q1. And then when it gets to Q3, they absolutely shit the bed. Something changes in an hour and a half. They tweak something they really shouldn't. They mess with something that's working. This is not one of those times. They did very, very well. At least one of them did. No drama, no crashes. The track was finally where it needed to be. Qualifying was just fast. So we're just going to get into our top 10, going from 10 to 1. Lewis Hamilton in 10th. The only reason why he was in 10th, wasn't really super happy with the final setup that he had. He missed a couple corners, didn't quite take the opportunity that he needed to get up higher up in qualifying. Nico Hülkenberg in 9th, Piastri in 8th, Yuki Tsunoda in 7th, Lando Norris in 6th, Verstappen in 5th, Leclerc in 4th, Gasly, the Alpine wonder in 3rd, Sainz in 2nd, George Russell. There was absolutely nothing wrong with his qualifying weekend at all. Ends up finishing top of the pile in pole. Interesting to note, you see Norris in 6th, Piastri in 8th. Again, I'm going to contribute that to the weather and the fact that they're just not really used to a slick track like this. Normally when it's slick for them, it's raining. You have a different mentality. You have different tires. It's raining. I got full wets on. We're going to be good to go. I know what they can do. Now you've got full slicks, even with the soft tires, the stickiest tires that they have, you're still skating around on this track more than you really, really should. I think it kind of crept into some of the drivers' minds, as well as why risk it and not be able to potentially make the race the next day or add more work to your team that you absolutely need to or be sore. So I think we also saw some of these drivers slow down, and I use that in air quotes, slow down a little bit just to make it through qualifying, and then they resort themselves. It's supposed to be a fantastic day for race day. So let's get in. Well, folks, it's officially time to talk about that thing that we all been looking forward to. That is right. It is officially time for the race. It is 11 p.m. local time, late race. We are talking 17 turns, 50 laps, top speed 350.5 kilometers an hour, distance of 6.2 kilometers per lap, fastest lap 1 minute 35.4 in 2023 by none other than himself, Oscar Piastri. First question that came to mind is, will Williams be facing two cars on the track for the Las Vegas Grand Prix? Simple answer, short answer. The answer is yes. And Colapinto is a pit lane start. It's not because they went past Parc Fermé to repair the car. These guys are such pros. It's because they changed the setup of the car itself. They did not like the way the car was reacting in the warmups. Therefore, they absolutely 100% changed it. That's what put him in the pit lane. Weather was perfect. Weather was warm. Track was good. Five lights out and away we go, as someone intelligent once said. It has been one of the fastest and cleanest starts to a race of the entire season. I used to make fun of the Las Vegas Grand Prix track. I really did. When I saw the layout, it looks like a pig. It looks very uninteresting. It is a very boring looking track if you don't know what you're looking at. And when I saw the track, I obviously had absolutely no idea what the fuck I was looking at, because it is one of the best tracks I have seen, like, in decades. 100% decades. It's smooth. It's super fast. The lines are clean. You can pass in two really good, very well-designed spots. There is no traffic jam. There is no, there's no spots for a lot of interference or running each other off the track. It's a good F1 circuit. It is a fantastic F1 circuit. I think the drivers really do appreciate it. They really do like it. And you can see it because of the performances that these guys put on for us. And when those five lights go out, everyone shoots out like a bat out of hell. Right off the bat, Leclerc versus Sainz. The two Ferraris are going back to back. Now, they know they're not in the driver's championship conversation right now. They're just not. Three races left. They're not going to win. There's absolutely no chance. Ferrari is definitely in the Constructors' Championship fight. 100% they are. They need to take points out of both McLaren and they need to take points out of Mercedes. Now, Mercedes is a little bit further back. So it's almost like a 2-1. Mercedes runs a good race. They're taking points out of McLaren. Ferrari runs a good race. They don't have to necessarily beat Mercedes, but as long as Ferrari has a really good race, they race together, they don't have any screw-ups, no one crashes, and they take points away from McLaren. Again, it's a win-win. McLaren now has to beat three teams in the top four to keep that point differential till the end of the season. It's going to be tight. McLaren essentially cannot afford any mishaps whatsoever. They can't afford a crash. They can't afford a DQ. They can't afford a slow race from either of their drivers. They absolutely 100% have to perform at their peak. Now, with all that being said, Ferrari drivers still have a tendency to drive against themselves really, really hard, harder than they absolutely need to. It was Leclerc versus Sainz for a very, very long time, a couple of laps. It was really good. All of a sudden, Leclerc starts to slow down again. All of a sudden, he's blown through his tires. The tires take longer to warm up. This track is still pretty slick at the beginning of the race, which means you're going to be on those tires a little longer with a little bit more slipping. What does slippage do? It takes away the rubber off the tire, which means it's higher degradation in a shorter amount of time. These tires are not lasting the recommended laps that Pirelli has set forth for them for this race. They're at least 5 to 6 laps short. I don't really think Leclerc thought about that. Now, when I said McLaren can't afford any mistakes, that's from both drivers. I don't think both of them realize that. About 3 laps in, all of a sudden, Oscar Piastri, 5-second penalty for a false start. You see him line up in his box. That's where he was supposed to be. He did end up qualifying in 8th, right? So you need a clean, fast start. You need nothing to go wrong in front of you. Or if something does go wrong in front of you, he can't afford to get caught up in it. Well, false start, front tires, past the white line, automatic 5 seconds, definitely, definitely not helping his situation or his team. Super, super clean race after that. These guys were just McLaren rocket ships. Hamilton trying to make up as much ground as he possibly can. Starts in 10th. I mean, top 10, you got to get those points. You got to take them away from Ferrari. You got to take them away from McLaren. I mean, at this point, it's all sponsorship money. Now, Mercedes doesn't necessarily need more sponsorship money, but still, sponsorship money for the drivers is always, always a good thing. We're going tickety-boo. We're going fast. We're going to go as fast as we possibly can. Some cars can take it. Some cars can't. Remember, Pierre Gasly started in 3rd. Really, really good qualifying lap. Apparently, that's all his engine can take. Lap 16, DNF, an old school, what we call a 90s engine blowout. You're watching him drive down. He did complain about a half a lap before that he's losing power. Alpine technicians get back on the horn to him. Hey, there's nothing wrong on our end. All the numbers seem absolutely fine. These drivers know when something's about to go wrong, and Gasly absolutely knew what was about to go. You're seeing this sign. You're seeing this picture of him driving down the straight stretch in Vegas, and all of a sudden this big boom of blue smoke out of the back of the car. His day is officially done. Now, the best part about what had happened, the silver lining is for everybody else, where he was on the track, he was able to finish the straight stretch and kind of coast slash half-ass drive in to the pit lane to his box. So they didn't even have to slow down the race. No yellow flag, no caution, no nothing. It was just big puff of blue smoke, you drive into the pits, end your day. Very, very unfortunate for him because Gasly did perform so well in qualifying. The car looked really, really good. But these high-performance engines and the stress they get put through, sometimes they last 24 races. Sometimes they don't last more than two. A mysterious DNF, watching the whole race, paying attention. All of a sudden, Alex Albon pulls in and lap 30. Just all of a sudden, he's gone. He's no longer racing. In the comments, if you guys can comment, I did miss what had happened to Albon. He's been on such a good streak of getting points, on a really good streak for Williams, getting those points that they need. It's very unfortunate for him. He sounded very, very dejected, super annoyed, mad to a fact. It's like Williams could not just catch a break this weekend. And that was it for the drama for this race. I am very, very happy to say. I was saying it before, I love the Las Vegas race. I judged it too quickly. I judged it too harshly, just purely on looks. But second year in a row, I mean, they really fixed what the issues were last season. They got everything welded down and epoxy down, however they needed to. But the track itself is just so, I don't want to call it a perfect track, but I do want to say that whoever, and I can't remember off the top of my head, whoever did design the track in Vegas, they know their history. They know what it was back in the 80s when they were at Caesar's Palace. They are definitely a fan of Formula One. The reason that you can tell that is because it's kind of like they've taken the best parts of every track and they put it into one. It's smooth. It's easy to watch. It's super easy to drive. It looks like these guys can really, 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 really get on that throttle. It's easy to pass. It's easy to do, pass and then repass. And then it's not a lot of traffic caught up. It's not a lot of, it's not a lot of bullshit. It's not about the pomp and circumstance of the history of the track. Granted, it's brand new. That's only a 2-year track, but that gives them the advantage of you can build it how you need it and you don't have to rely on the history of it. Now, I'm thinking of Monaco when I say this, is that it's more the history of Monaco than what the track efficiency is like as we speak, where Vegas has to build something from scratch. They have to be able to go, all right, this is what we're doing. This is how we need to build it so they can be in that legacy conversation. And I do think that as long as prices don't get too out of whack, as long as they don't fuck with the track, essentially, they absolutely will be, they will be in that legacy conversation. I do believe Vegas will be around for a very, very, very long time. And it deservedly needs to be. They thought about it really well. They did it really, really, really well. And I think it's going to be one of those, I just keep coming back to it. It's going to be one of those tracks that we're going to see for a very long time. And it's going to be a track that we talk about for a very, very long time. Well, enough about that. Let us talk about the top 10. Let us talk about the finish. I've kind of buried the lead. George Russell went from first and finished first. He led the entire race. At some point, he had a 9, 10, 11 second lead in the race. He had one of those weekends where if anything went wrong, it was going to be on him. It wasn't going to be any other drivers. He was by himself the entire time. We have seen George Russell have really, really good races and just absolutely foobar it for no reason. Sometimes out of his control, sometimes totally his own fault. This was not one of those cases. He was a very smooth, confident driver. All he had to do was get through the first, call it two laps. Everything settled in, and he just started to pull away. The Mercedes, I keep coming back to it, the Mercedes in cold weather, it's just a different animal. It's a different machine. The drivers drive better, the car performs better, and they just ran away with the win. Let's go through your top 10 from 10 to 1. 10th, Checo Perez. He got a point. Yay! Yuki Tsunoda in 9th. Nico Hülkenberg in 8th. Piastri in 7th. Norris in 6th. And that's right, Max Verstappen finishes in 5th. Max Verstappen is the four-time 2024 Drivers' Championship in Las Vegas. Mathematically, even if he crashes out for the next two races and does not win the sprint, he will still be the 2024 champion, although none of that will actually ever happen. Leclerc in 4th, Sainz in 3rd, Hamilton in 2nd, and Russell in 1st. Fantastic race from Ferrari. They did not foobar their own race like they have in the past. They've got those clowns out of the way. Really good drive from both of those teams. Congratulations to everybody. So, like I said, deep breath. Max Verstappen is a 2024 Drivers' Championship, or champion. Red Bull will not be winning the Constructors' Champion. But let's go through the points now for the Drivers' Championship and see where everybody sits. Max Verstappen has won with 403 points. Lando Norris is in second with 340. Leclerc is not that far behind him. He's in third with 319. Piastri's in fourth with 268. Carlos Sainz is in fifth with 259 points. George Russell's in sixth with 217. Lewis Hamilton, again, right on his heels in seventh with 208. Checo Perez is still in eighth with 152 points. Fernando Alonso's in ninth with 62 points. And good old Nico Hülkenberg is in 10th with 25 points. The Constructors' Championships. Now, this is what we're definitely going to be looking for and looking towards for the next two races. There is still a sprint to come along, so there is potentially 14 points. I believe it's 14 points total if two teams get first and second plus fastest lap. So there's still some points available before the end of the 2024 season. McLaren is in first with 608 points. Ferrari is right behind them with 584 points. Red Bull's in third with 555. Mercedes is in fourth with 425 points. Aston Martin's in fifth with 86. Haas is in sixth with 50 points. Alpine is in seventh with 49 points. VCarb is in eighth with 46 points. Williams is ninth in 17 points. And good old Kicksalba is still dead last. No points. It did look like for a bit that Valtteri Bottas was going to be able to bring in the first point for Kicksalba this season. And unfortunately for him, obviously that did not work out. I feel sorry for him. I think he needs to go to either Audi if there's a seat that's open, or he kind of takes the season off, takes 2025 off, and he goes to GMC Cadillac. I think that would be the best move for him. I don't think he's done in Formula One. I don't think Formula One's done with Valtteri Bottas either. And I just had a thought. Bear with me on this one. GMC Cadillac, 2026. Two drivers, Valtteri Bottas, Danny Ric. I think that would be by far the best like public lineup that team could possibly put together. They're both veterans. They know what they're doing. They don't actually suck. They just both this season have cars underneath them that can't do fucking anything. Give them a proper development car. Give them a team that actually cares. Danny Ric, Valtteri Bottas, 2026 for GMC Cadillac. I hope you heard it here first. So that means we only have officially two races left this season. We have Qatar and we have Abu Dhabi. Take a guess on which one is going to be our last sprint of the 2024 season. That is right. That is the Qatar Airways Qatar Grand Prix. We've got another sprint race. Full practice November 29th at 6:30 our time. Sprint qualifying again is on the 29th, 10:30 to 11:15. The sprint race itself is the next day on the 30th, 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock. Qualifying for the race itself will be on the 30th from 11 until noon our time. And then the race December 1st, 9 o'clock race our time. It's not that early of a race. It's not that bad for us this weekend, which is fantastic. Thank God. I'm excited to see Qatar. Qatar is always a good race. They've got what I consider three really good straights. They've got that one massive strip. I mean, 57 laps. It's going to be, 5.4 kilometers. It's going to be really, really good race. The weather is always going to be perfect. It's going to be a little windy. It's going to be hot, but it's definitely, definitely going to be dry. I cannot wait for this race. I cannot wait to see what these guys can do for the rest of this season. And folks, there we have it. That is it. That is the breakdown of the 2024 Las Vegas Grand Prix. Leave a comment, leave a like. Let me know what you guys think of this episode. If there's any topics that I have missed or any topics that you would like me to talk about for Qatar or just for the 2024 season, please in the comments, let me know. I value you guys' opinion. You guys are the reason why I make this podcast. I find it entertaining. I find it fun, and I hope you guys also enjoy it. And as always, I would like to send out a massive thank you from everybody here from F101. And until next time, keep the tires burning and keep those gears shifting. Talk to you later.